on the sensational news of him moving to Super League, as you could imagine, he's been inundated with interview requests. But as some of you will know, and as you're about to hear, he's passionate about his family and his community. Consequently, he was keen to give something back to the people of Warrington. Therefore, he chose its Rugby League podcast. Here at What Would Brian Bevan Say, it's our pleasure to give you Greg Inglis. Good day, Greg. How are you going, mate?
Well, I'm really well, thank you.
And I know we've been very fortunate here in Australia with COVID, but where do we find you in this lockdown?
Well, lockdown's eased up here. Well, New South Wales really hasn't closed the border, so I'm back home in Maxville, where I grew up with, throughout my junior life, and just up here seeing the family, friends, and just getting back and being back in country.
Well, you're certainly looking nice and relaxed, and boy, we find you in great shape. You've not let yourself go at all.
So I let myself go in the first couple of months, but then, as most people do when they retire. But yeah, it's had a lot of time, just to get back into it, just really sit back, relax, and like I said, just let go of the pressure of the what's been happening over here and throughout my career. Just getting back into it. Been really good. It's just something that I've always known, so I couldn't stay away from it for too long.
Yeah.
How have you been keeping in shape, Greg, while you've been in lockdown? Have you been doing your own thing?
I built my home gym at, down in Catherine Fields. I actually did a training session this morning with one of my good friends. She owns a physiotherapy clinic here, and she's got all the equipment at the back. So I was up at 6 o'clock this morning doing a session with her. She's Pilates instructor, yoga instructor, so he just went through a whole array of different things. Just down home, just keeping lightweight, a watt bike, little dumbbell, and just more, not really getting into running yet. Yeah, just keeping ticking over and watching me weight and getting into running probably in the next month or month and a half or so.
Your heritage, your background, I understand you come from a Dungati. Am I saying that correct?
Dungati,
okay. All right, mate, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, don't worry, I'm pretty sure I'll get a bit of stick when I go over there and try to pronounce some stuff too. So, it's a tribe up here, around the Kempsey area. Yeah. Dungati is my heritage background. So,
and it's a beautiful part of the world to grow up there on the northern New South Wales coast between Port Macquarie and South West Rocks. A fair bit of fishing to be had as well, I expect.
There was a lot of fishing going on, a lot of getting out, riding a bike, just doing what kids did back then.
Yeah.
Just got in a skate park, didn't really know how to skate, tried rollerblades, didn't know how to rollerblade really. So I just pretty much stuck to the football and running around the field. And done swimming squad. Used to do swimming as a junior and, I quite enjoy swimming.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so, when I got older, my week was consistent of early morning swim squad at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Go home, get changed, go to school. After school, swim squad again, followed by training, and then repeat that about four times a week.
Gee. Now, of course, we've got Ian Thorpe, who's an absolute legend in Australia. Man, he's a big lad. He's tall, he's lean. You're even bigger, mate. I mean, you must have been a pretty good swimmer. What sort of standard did you swim to?
I ended up going to state for freestyle.
Yeah.
Ended up going for two events, one for freestyle and one for the relay. But for state, I just missed out on the 200. So, it's being where I was just very active and I couldn't really sit still for very long. Found something to do or, just made friends.
My daughter does squads for Manly. She's a very good swimmer. But it gets to the stage where it just becomes absolutely non-stop, doesn't it? You've got to be in that pool twice a day if you want to go to that next level, really.
Once you go to that next level, well, then it's just constant, it's gotten a lot better. The people, with science in every sport, science has taken over, so you don't spend as much time in the pool as you normally would.
Yeah.
Back when I was growing up anyway.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as shoulder rehab or, you know, all this core stuff. It was just goggles on, look at the black line and just swim as fast as you can.
Yeah, so. Back in two, mate, back in two. So, I mean, clearly you're a phenomenal athlete. I mean, you know, you're a swimmer, you're a footy player. What other sports did you play that you sort of shone at?
I went to state for touch, basketball, athletics, little athletics, went to regionals with that. And people really get to those places if you don't really love what you're doing.
You hold the record for the most Origin tries with 18. You nearly got 19. I know that you got pulled back on one because a ball was ripped out. But in that run, Josh Dugan and also Brett Morris are trying to run you down and they get nowhere near you. Just how quick are you over 100 and 200 metres?
Oh, not too sure. I'm not into one with the GPS or, you know, all that data kind of stuff. It's just, I just go more of how I'm feeling during the week and how my body's feeling during the game. But in those split moments, ball in hand and just try to get outrun the other guy behind you.
Under the concussion examination, here's Pierce losing the ball.
Go, Hugo.
It's gone with Inglis now. Greg Inglis in a foot race. Morris is chasing.
Go,
so is Dugan. Greg Inglis is running away from them, though. There's carnage behind him, but Inglis scores his second try of the night.
He's out-sprinted the best and got there.
Do you feel almost quicker than when you've got the ball in your hands rather than when you haven't got the ball in your hands?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, you get me to do a fitness drill, I'll probably be 2 minutes slower than I would be if I had a football in my hand. So.
So the minute that footy goes in your hand, you're just gone. That's it, isn't it? It's just a different feeling altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much it. You just forget about everything else.
We had Gareth Widdop on the podcast and we discussed with Gareth about the wire flyer. It's a runner between the sticks that the public and the players have to try and run down. We asked Gareth what distance would he like to take on the wire flyer over and he said 5 metres. Would you like to take him on over 100 metres, Greg, or possibly 200?
No, me, I'm a bit stubborn, so I'll give both a go.
Now, in 1961, the Manchester United manager, Matt Busby, received a telegram from the club's Northern Ireland scout, Bob Bishop. It contained 8 words only. It read, "I think I have found you a genius." The subject message was, of course, about the Manchester United genius, George Best. There's no doubt in my mind, Greg, and also in the Australian public's mind, you are a footballing genius. At what age were you spotted by a scout and did you know you were going into rugby league?
Look, I got scouted when I was 14 years of age. Signed to my manager when I was 15 years of age, and then, you know, that's probably when I was 15 was when it really took over. I just loved football growing up as a kid. I loved many sports, but, you know, for some reason I just kept going back to rugby league.
We've had so many terrific players at Warrington over the years that contribute to their success by the attributes they bring to the game. Jonathan Davis, so much speed and vision. Brian Bevan, just electric pace. Les Boyd and Adrian Morley, the physicality and the strength that they had in their game. And also Mike Gregory, possibly, who was just that will to win, that determination to be a champion. But very few players have all those attributes, Greg. You seem to have all of those. Did they come to you all at the same time in life, or did those sort of attributes come to you one by one as you grew up?
I think I was about a jockey's weight when I came through the grades. Just a skinny kid, went through school, went through, you know, sport, home life around here, just growing up as a young teenager. I think I was weighing about 78 kilos, and I couldn't bench press a 20 kilo bar at the age of 17. So it definitely came on a bit later. I think throughout my junior footy or my junior career, it was just all based on skill and talent.
And when you went to Melbourne, then did they look at you and think you've got this raw ability, but we're going to beef you up? And did they put you on a regime of targets to get 10, 15 kilos on, or did it just come naturally as you grew older?
Oh, no, they, back then it was just one gym session. You know, the forwards are lifting 160 kilos. You got to try and lift 160 kilos. So, you know, it was, but yeah, now these days it's individualized. It's very, like I said before earlier, it's very scientific and very modified to that player. But back then it was, you know, backs were trying lifting almost the same amount as Ford's was, probably, you know, front rows, and she didn't come on until, I don't know, about the age 22, I started, you know, my body started transforming. And
so it was a natural thing as you grew older, really, but the competitiveness within the squad at training meant you pushed yourself a bit harder to try and lift as much as other people around you.
When I first went down there, I had my first pre-season at 16. It was only like for 2-3 weeks. And,
yeah,
you know, one of the training sessions, I just couldn't finish it. And Craig said something to me and my manager, and I came home and I just decided, you know, this is not what I want. I don't want to be at home here. I want to, you know, make something of it. Like you said, just came competitive at training, and just something from that day, what Craig said, just really stuck with me. And then, yeah, that's what made me who I am as a trainer and as a competitor.
15, Webb about to come back into the game. He's been here before as Price gets it back. Thurston gets it on. Lockyer gives it away. Picked up by Inglis. Inglis for the corner. Inglis, I think, has scored.
What a great take by Greg Inglis. No problem.
We don't need to go upstairs anymore.
That's a Queensland try.
Good boy.
Yeah, good boy. 100% right, Rabbits.
Youngest player to play Origin since Ben Aiken, who was the youngest. That's great to see.
Well, that's why he's in the side. That kind of ability, as Phil Gould pointed out, it's a great take. He's just 19. He will play a lot more games in the Maroon jersey. Don't worry about that.
I remember hearing from Steve Bell, who played for the Storm and also then came up here to the Eagles prior to going over to Super League and playing for Catalans. He said the warm down at Melbourne was something different compared to anywhere else. It wasn't just a case purely of, you know, having a shower, packing up your kit and going home for the weekend. It was really intense in what you did down there, Greg.
No, it was, yeah, that's exactly what, you know, exactly how it was down there. Turn yourself over to S&C coach and away you go. No two ways about it. And really, if you look back on it now, yeah, it was harsh, but that's what made Melbourne Storm the club it is today.
And so what exactly do they have you doing in that warm down?
Just sit, ice bath, stretch, protein. We're in there for another, I don't know, 40 minutes after the game's done to actually warm down and stretch and do everything that we can possibly can.
And how do you think that warm down has been advantageous to you in your career as it's gone on? Do you think that you've lasted longer, your longevity in the sport is possibly because of that warm down and what you learnt at Melbourne when they were ahead of their time?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, clubs still do it today. And it's just comes muscle memory. Like, you know, you keep doing something for so long. Well, then, you know, I'll jump in ice baths for 5 minutes before games. I don't know how I'm going to do it over there. But
well, no, you're just jumping the Manchester Ship Canal, mate. That's all you need to do. You'll be fine.
I'll just walk outside at some of the games. But, yeah, it's something that I've always done is jump in the ice bath before games. Doesn't matter if it's big or small. It's just, I guess it's just habit.
That Melbourne team was just flooded with stars all the way through from 1 to 13, including the interchange bench. Early on in your career, I think Billy Slater got injured and you moved to fullback. Did you have a preference where you played as a kid? Did it matter to you that you were in that Storm team on the wing, at centre, or at fullback?
No, I didn't have a preference whatsoever. The reason being because if, you know, when coaches or selectors want to hand you that jersey, and well, then they obviously got a belief in you, and then. So in my mind, I was thinking, okay, they obviously think I can do the job. They got belief in me, so I don't want to let them down. And, you know, going back there, I just studied. I just did what I can to understand the game. And the biggest challenge that I found going back there was, you know, trying to order and tell, you know, the likes of Robbie Kearns, you know, where to stand in the defensive line, Alex Chan, you know, just
yeah,
Dallas Johnson. You know, Cam Smith, just screaming at them from the back and trying to tell them where to go. That was the biggest challenge out of it all.
And were you shy, Greg?
Yeah, I was shy at the start. And then Matt Geyer came over to me. He always calls me kid, still calls me kid. And, yeah, as a kid, it's okay. You know, the boys, they can handle it. You just do what you think is best for the team and the boys will listen to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just... You know, Matt Geyer was that father figure. Craig Bellamy was more like the grumpy old man grandfather. So, I know, look, it was a great support network down there, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Would you say, Greg, that in a structured environment like Melbourne, you could express yourself, and were you allowed to play off-the-cuff football?
Well, it was in a structured, like, obviously it was very structured, and, you know, teams, at that time, teams were saying we now had to stop Melbourne Storm, but, you know, the senior playing group down there at the time, and Craig and the coaching staff was like, look, they can say all they want about what's coming, but they have to stop it. So the boys always played their role, played their part within that special, you know, in that team. That's what made Melbourne so great in those early years, is that they just did their job consistently for over a season, not just over 80 minutes. They continue to do that, and that's why Cam's playing over 400 and something games, because he's just consistent in what he does. And, you know, Cam, I don't know, when I went to 5'8", I went to number 6, Craig just said, just play off the top of your head, not have a couple of your shapes that you have, and then, but other than that, just play what's in front. You guys just go for it.
We've got 55 minutes played.
Oh, straight through Beaver. Straight through Beaver. English.
Oh, no, here's another try. What a great try. Can he step away from English?
Yes,
unbelievable
Ray.
Try.
Oh, rugby league.
As good a try as you'd seen a grand final ever.
Rugby league, take a bow.
That was amazing.
That was beautiful rugby league. And who was the man who he went through? Beaver. That must be Phil.
Well,
you know, it was going to be a magic night for the Beaver. You know, he's had so much grand final experience.
A fantastic try by you there in the grand final for Melbourne. Greg, you're right-footed, you're right-handed. Have you got a preference on which side of the field do you want to play on? Do you prefer to step off that foot and come back inside, or you know, use that fend and go on the outside? What's easier for you?
It's more natural on the left side for me, but...
And why is it that left side?
I don't know. I think it's just, like I said, I think earlier, it's just muscle memory that just keeps coming back into your mind, and your mind just knows the right lines where to play, where if you shift over to the other side, nothing's really changes. It's just getting your nose to play with that back rower, with that winger, with that halfback on that side.
Right, so it's a bit like when you're learning to surf, I guess. You stand on the board, get pushed from behind, and you know whether you're goofy or you're regular.
The last time I surfed, I knocked myself out, so I didn't go back.
Well, you don't need to worry, mate, because there's no swell on the River Mersey. That time during your stay at Melbourne, you won pretty much everything you could possibly win. You were winner in 2 grand finals, a World Club Challenge. You were crowned the best international newcomer. You were listed in the Melbourne Storm of the Decade, the Clive Churchill medalist, named the best centre in the Indigenous team, the Wally Lewis medalist, Dally M Player of the Year, the Four Nations Player of the Tournament, and also the world's best player, the Golden Boot best player in the world. Mate, I've got to ask the question, just how big is your trophy cabinet? I mean, where'd you keep it all?
It's pretty much scattered all over the place. As like I said, a couple of Queensland and stuff up here at my parents, and a couple of jerseys and photo frames at my Nana Pops. And, you know, I've got a few, locked away in storage. So it's a bit scattered over the place, and, you know, it's in Sydney. Sydney houses are too small, so I couldn't fit more in the one.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've got to ask you this, mate. My partner's a journalist, and she interviews the movie stars. And quite bizarrely, a fair few of them keep trophies in the toilet. I won't ask you which one you keep in the toilet, but have you got any in the dunny?
No, I think that's just a bit weird and a bit, you know. I think maybe they just watched a bit too many movies themselves. So, it's pretty much good luck getting stuff out of my parents' and grandparents' house.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you had enough trophies as it was, but then you moved to Souths. What took you to Souths? I mean, you seem so settled in Melbourne.
Obviously, there was a big, massive scandal, going on, salary cap scandal. You know, I love Melbourne. I love my time down there. It was a great, you know, great bunch of golf, core group players, great club. You know, I want to be closer to my family and that, which is only a 5-hour drive north now from Sydney. So...
Yeah,
it's just something that I just wanted to get back to and try to get back home more often where as before I had to catch two flights to get home from Melbourne.
And Melbourne is, of course, an AFL city. It's not predominantly a rugby league town. Did you notice a big difference when you moved to Sydney? You know, that beating heart of Redfern. It's got such a wonderful Indigenous community there. Did you feel you were more around rugby league when you got there? Was it different?
Yeah, at the start it was a difference, but now it's just, you know, it just comes with who you are, or who I am. And obviously it was a massive signing. South never signed, you know, big name players in the history or, you know, other than the last couple of years. So, you know, it's South, we kicked out the comp, came back in, everyone was just, you know, thrashing South, wooden spoons here and there. And, you know, people forget what, you know, John Sutton, who recently retired as well, has been there through that hard time. So, you know, it's a credit to him to actually stick it out. And that just shows how, you know, what a kind of bloke and player he actually is and what he contributed to the club itself.
Was that part of the, I mean, we've seen the pictures of when South won the grand final and self, Burgess, other players, the emotion just came out, particularly because you sort of knew you'd won that game with 10 minutes to go. Was that a build-up of emotion and what you'd been building to as a team over those 3 years then? Was it just a release of emotion?
Yeah, the following 2 years prior to that, we was knocked out in the prelim. You know, to actually get there in the third year, it was very emotional. But we had old Lottie Dakiri come back. You know, he was really good for the younger guys. And, you know, I've obviously been there before in the grand final week with Melbourne. And so it was just really good to have that, you know, that older head and Lottie and my experiences as well. But, you know, 43-year drought, it's just, that whole week, it's emotionally draining for myself. I can only speak for myself. And I went home. I didn't actually go out celebrating with the boys until the next day.
26-6. And Keary makes a dart. Gets the ball away to GI. GI's going to score. He's going to put another nail in the coffin. And the Goanna crawls down to the northern end. South Sydney players leaping on top of the pile. Incredible scenes.
And South Sydney can now celebrate. You see what it's meant to the players, what it means to the crowd, what it means to the club.
One thing I need to ask you, mate, is I went to Brookie Oval. I don't watch Manly. If Manly were playing in the backyard, I'd draw the curtains, mate. I'm primrose and blue through and through. But I always go along and support the English lads, and the Burgess boys were playing for South, and you were playing as well. You came out before the game. One of your coaches was kicking balls to you. You were standing under the end, the sticks end that faced DY and Curl Curl, and you were catching these balls. He was pretty much kicking them to you from the halfway line. I have never seen anyone throw a ball as far as you can throw a ball. I thought you would kick the ball back to him, and you threw it like a rugby league pass, pretty much, mate, back to the halfway line. And all the kids around me were just shaking their heads. They couldn't believe what a superstar they were watching. To anyone listening to this and any young kids coming through, how on earth do you throw a footy that far? Where is that power and that skill coming from?
Like I said before, I think it just came from what I did as a kid, just, I don't know, trying to pull in fishes to build my shoulders up or, you know, shot put. You know, I did all these things as a kid, and I think now my body didn't mature properly until I actually got to the age of 18 when I actually didn't hit the gym. But to me, I was always had, you know, at school, after school, I always had something, you know, kicking the footy around, soccer ball around, cricket ball, just pretty much whatever I could get my hands on. So, you know, to me, it just became second nature.
So is it coming from the strength in your shoulders? Is it coming from the speed you're flicking it? Is it coming from the spin? Where do you think it's coming from?
Tell you the truth, I don't actually think about it. I just do it.
Yeah, you're going to have to throw that long pass out when you're warming up on your first appearance, though, Greg.
one thing I never do is show off. It's just something that, that's just me.
How far can you throw a footy, mate?
About 40-odd metres.
So that, just for everyone out there back in Warrington, that's probably turning down from Wilderspool Causeway at Fletcher Street all the way to the turnstiles at the old Wilderspool. That is a phenomenal distance that you're throwing a footy. Unbelievable.
just touching on a subject that's, I know, a little bit close to your heart, and it's difficult for everyone, and we've all lost people that are very close to us. I know that you were very close to an absolutely brilliant cricketer who had his life in front of him. He was just a fabulous career that was sort of cut short in Phil Hughes. Could you tell us your relationship with Phil?
Yeah, it was more my sister that had the, they grew up together, same year together. They grew, went to play football together, coming through the ranks. And his older brother was in my year, and we played footy, I played footy in his, in our footy side. But they just lived around the corner, so, we used to go around there, kick a footy, play cricket in the backyard. That's what you do when you grow up in a small town like the Maxwell. His parents are still here, and, it's Virginia and Greg. They're absolutely wonderful parents and wonderful family. And it was more my sister that was, knew Phil a lot more. But he was just one of those guys that just went about his business, that real quiet achiever. And, it just goes to show, even when he hit that century at, MCG for the first time, or I think it was SCG, he was, wasn't overconfident, he wasn't overcocky, he wasn't, he was just nice, calm. And that's the feel that, I remember as a kid growing up.
The length has been good. Nothing easy to drive. There it is. The first Australian cricketer ever to do that. 100 on debut. Phillip Hughes in 123 balls.
Really well played. Right from the first ball he faced today, Phillip Hughes has looked in really good touch. Boundaries to start his innings all around the ground, and what a big moment. On debut, a century at the mighty MCG, a moment Phil Hughes will never forget.
Greg, Warrington very much a cricketing town. We had the likes of John Crawley, who played for Warrington Sports Club, Neil Fairbrother, who played for Grappenhall, both went on to play for England, and not forgetting the legendary George Duckworth. What are you like at cricket? Are you a batsman or a bowler?
Nah, sometimes I was hit and miss, Mr. Inconsistent. So my best mate, old man, was our coach, and he used to stick me on the boundary line because at least I got to throw it in a bit quicker than the others.
Yeah, threw it in over the stumps.
Yeah.
Mate, tell us about your dad. I know he's been there all the way through your career, and he was there for that, that press conference that you gave when your career came to an end at Souths. He's been a big part of your life and your football history.
Yeah, definitely. My parents and my grandparents have been a big influence on my rugby league career, on my life in general. And it's just, it goes in order. Whatever news I get or whatever it goes, just decisions I make, it's all it goes in order. Mum, dad first, and then pop second, and then filters down to the family. So that's just the way it's always been.
And are the tickets booked for them all to follow you over to Manchester Airport and see you play at the Halliwell Jones?
Oh, Mum will probably say, Dad said, I'm on the plane with you. So.
Good on him. Good on him.
He said he's got his passport ready to go.
Your career came to an end at Souths, and I think it was a shock to everyone because you were you were right on the top of your game still. And I know there was injuries, and at the press conference you said that it wasn't for a mental reason, it wasn't for a physical reason. Now you've had time to sort of reflect on that, Greg, and sort of take a bit of time away from the game. Do you know why it was, why you sort of wanted to give it away at that stage?
Yeah, look, there was the bottom line of it. It's just, one, my body couldn't, just keep getting up, and I just got tired of, trying to get my body right just to get through your training. When I sit back and think about it, like you said, so it's going to be 2 years until we come out. My body's feeling fresh. It's been feeling great.
Yeah.
And, my body, I haven't had that since I was 16 years old. So having this 2 years off, it actually gets the body time to heal.
You think that rest really makes a difference? That rest has really made a difference to you?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And, it's the biggest fight anyone can have through life is having voices in your head saying, other things that really get down to you. And that's why I'm a big outspoken person about mental health or wellness. So as you can tell, I'm passionate about it because I've been through it and I can actually talk about it. I'm not one that goes to somewhere and try to make up, my heart's here. I know what I'm talking about because I live for the mental illness side of it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's, it's helped me out a lot, and I can actually sit in openly and talk about it and the help that I still receive today.
Which is great, and I think it's imperative that we all keep talking and speaking to friends and keeping in contact with people
to making sure that they are okay. One thing that you are very passionate about, Greg, and I've watched this on National Indigenous Television and also SBS, is what a superb Indigenous leader and mentor you've become. When you visit a school or a hospital, the difference is extraordinary. Communities are now healthier because of your work. More Indigenous children are finishing their HSC, and more Indigenous men and women find work and they're staying in work. That involvement one day, I think, might become a higher accolade than your achievements in the rugby league field. What does that mean to you, Greg, that passion amongst the Indigenous community?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm setting things up here that's it's going to be called the Goenna Academy. It's just talking about going back in the schools, talking about, you know, dental hygiene, healthy living, you know, what to eat, what's the right food to eat, what's the sometimes food to eat, like your Maccas and, you know, because we're all guilty of it. You know, there's no one out there that's going to go, yeah, this is what you always should eat and do that. But, you know, you just, I guess I go talk to them, run a junior clinic on a Saturday, on a weekend for the junior, for that local community, and on the Sunday have a golf day for the corporate local businesses. And whatever money gets generated from that weekend, raffles or et cetera, whatever, percentage of that goes back into the community itself. So, you know, that's about to be launched. Hopefully by the time I get over there and, you know, people back here that'll help me run it, we'll continue that. So when I get back to Australia, we'll just, you know, feel like it's nothing that's been left behind.
With reference to your Goenna celebrations, Greg, also known as a racehorse Goenna, as it can reach speeds of up to 25 kilometres an hour, the Goenna is revered for its strong self-worth and to remind us we are strong. Will you be changing that to celebrate howling like a wolf next year?
No, I'll keep my heritage alive while I'm still over the other side of the world. And, you know, I'm a proud Indigenous man. I'll keep it to the Goenna.
You'll keep the Goenna going. Will you miss your connection to country, Greg?
I won't miss my connection. I did miss it a lot when I was, you know, obviously playing a lot throughout my career and I couldn't come home a lot. But now being back in, you know, back home here, having a chat with family before I actually made this decision, like I said, Nan Pop first, Mum, Dad, Nan Pop were the first ones I spoke to about. So we'll miss that little bit of connection, you know, with my country and with my heritage, but, you know, we'll just have to FaceTime back home and get to see where I grew up through FaceTime.
What is it, Greg, about the Indigenous community when it comes to footy? My dad's just turned 91. He grew up in the back streets of Orford, where they used to play tuck and pass. You don't see kids in Warrington playing tuck and pass anymore, but it seems we've had so many fabulous players come from your part of the country. Are you doing something differently as kids when you're growing up that makes you such skillful players?
Well, I can only speak on behalf of myself. Growing up around older cousins and that, it was trees that you get pushed into, so you have to be aware of the tree over in the corner. You have to be aware of a tap that you might slip your head on. Play on the road, start off with touch footy on the road, that turns into tackle, so you have to be careful of your knees being grazed. but then, you know, you grow up and you watch football, and that's what I did, and you just pick out different players, like Terry Lamb. I used to love watching Terry Lamb play.
Yeah.
Rick Steele was another one. Yeah. He's the first one who pretty much introduced the spiral pass here in Australia. And, you know, just seeing different, you know, Bradley Clyde, you know, just, you know, those areas, Ian Roberts. You know, big man, just physical, the physicality. But then you got your skillful players, you know, your Chuck Mundine, your Mark Gasnier. The Gidley brothers.
Yeah.
You got, you know, Badiris, Denny Badiris.
Just non-stop,
energetic, Ironman freak. And so, we just pick up different skills and you just go out and you just say, yeah, I'm going to be David Peachy today. Tomorrow I might be Paul Arrogan. I might be, you know.
Yeah, pick a player and off you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Growing up and watching Warrington, I came over to Australia in about 94, Greg, and I went to Brookvale Oval. And I saw a player at Brookvale Oval that I've never seen anyone do what he did with a football until that time, and that was Cliffy Lyons. Cliffy Lyons. Mate, what he could do with a football. The way he breezed across the park. I mean, I just don't know anyone touched him.
He's still over in Brookie playing now in C grade. I play golf with him now and then, and he's still looks like he's taking his time with it, but he still beats you playing golf too.
I hear he was pretty good at touch footy as well.
Yeah, played touch footy with him at the start of the year. He's like nothing's changed. He may be 60 or 70 odd, but nothing's changed. He's just like time pauses when he has a ball for him. But he just cranks.
Yeah. He just seems to show people. He shows people the ball, and then it's gone again. And he's like a magician the way he moves across the park.
Yeah, it's just him and Steve Menzies, what they've done throughout their careers, remarkable.
So we'll come on now to what everyone wants to know in Warrington, and that's, of course, moving to the Halliwell Jones, Greg. I know you're very friendly with JC, and it sort of came about through a phone call to Jason Clark.
Yeah, I just asked him, I said, oh, my body's actually feeling all right. What do you reckon if I come over there for a year? He said, oh, mate, they'll love it. Give Carl a call. So 2 days later, gave Carl a call and then went from there. And then, it took quite a convincing. He was in the background for about 2 months. That was going on back and forth. And, the club was really good, gave me my time to think about, weigh up all my options. And, I was just up in front and honest with him, saying I'm not coming over there to waste anyone's time. I'm coming over there to do a job. And that's my job, is to play the best footy that I can, and that's some value to the team. And at the same time, if, I don't want to stuff you guys around by, waiting on my decision as well. So, we were all on the same page with that before anything happened.
So the one question we've had on the podcast a lot is, are you coming? It's almost like people are pinching themselves. Is it a dream? Is Greg Inglis going to appear in Warrington? I can see you've got a big smile on your face, Greg. It's going to happen, isn't it, mate? You're going to be there.
Look, if it was a dream, I wouldn't be training. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So tell us about that training then. So, I mean, just for everyone that can't see this in Warrington, I mean, Greg is looking like he could play footy this afternoon. Mate, you're looking prime specimen. You look right in top shape there. You're good to go now?
I haven't started running yet. I've just been getting the lactic acid into my legs on the bike and building the muscles back up in the gym before you start running. So it's, if I wasn't running around the park for 80 minutes, I'd be ready to go.
What's your game weight, Greg? What sort of weight are you looking for?
Well, playing at centre will be between 1.6, 1.08 kgs. So if I was to go play at fullback, I'll drop down to 1.05.
So you're quite open to play any position at that weight?
In any of those, that's up to Pricey and the catchy staff, what they see fit. Then, I told Pricey I'll be coming over there under 1.10. So, I'm going to keep that word to him.
And how well do you know Pricey, Greg? Like, sort of, you've got a relationship with him before, haven't you?
No, I had no. All I just know from him from the Dragons. Obviously, played for South, known him at the Dragons. Just crossed paths that alone. But, he sort of stayed out of the chats with, what was going on with everything else before me signing. And then we all got on a phone call conference with Simon, Carl, and Steve, and that's pretty much all the contact or anything I've had with Pricey, but none other prior than that.
And have you spoken any to the other boys that have actually played over at Warrington? I know Matt King, obviously, you played with at Melbourne.
Yeah, Chrissy
Sando, we're still in contact with.
They've all sent our congratulations texts, message or whatsoever to me, so, yeah.
And you'll be hanging out with JC when you get over there. I heard today that he's looking at doing another year at Wire at least. So you'll sort of be hanging out with Jason, and he'll be showing you the ropes around Warrington, I guess.
Well, I hope he is. He's the one who got me there.
If he goes, mate, you can just rent his house. He can leave everything in the fridge, and you'll be fine, mate, just to keep going.
Like I said, Clarky's one of a kind.
you know, I don't think you'll ever come across another guy like Jason Clark.
So tell me about Jason Clark, because he goes under the radar a little bit at Warrington. You know, some people say, well, you know, what's Jason giving to the team? And then when you look at it closely, I mean, Warrington won at Wembley last year. Both those tries come from Jason Clark. He gets the play of the ball quick. He's almost given a voluntary tackle. He's it to his feet. He knows what he's doing. And from that, we got on a roll and scored. What does Jason Clark give to a team that we don't see?
He gives up his time a lot for the others around him.
Yeah.
He goes out of his way when he doesn't have to. And when he was here at Souths, I kept telling him, I said, you got to make time for Jason Clark. You can't make time for, you know, Greg Inglis. You got to make time for Jason Clark. So he's always here saying, yeah, I know, but it's, it just comes with, you know, I think it's just in his nature. Goes under the radar a lot. He knows his job on the footy field. He knows his role within the team. And he does it every single time the best possible way he can.
It's been noticeable during this period of lockdown in England. He's been out and about with the Warrington Foundation, delivering food parcels and making sure people in the community are right.
He would have been the first one to ring up the club and see if he can help anyone out in any sort of way, and that's just who he is.
So we're really lucky that he's playing for Warrington and not Wigan, otherwise you'd be in the cherry and white next year, Greg. That's doesn't even bear, thinking of, mate.
He's the one who got me there. So.
Don't worry, we'll tie him down, mate. He's going nowhere. He'll be there. Now, how much do you know about Super League? I mean, when I arrived in Australia, you know, the generation before me talked about the Challenge Cup final, but I couldn't find it for Cooey on TV when I arrived. Have you sort of taken much notice in English rugby league and what goes on?
Yeah, look, it's definitely come about much more, especially in the last few years. You know, coming from playing over there, there's forwards are the, you know, pretty much the top ranked players, and they're hard men, hard hitters. And but you know, there's a lot of skill involved, but it all comes back down to you want to win a competition, like we always say here. It's all about defence. You've got a winning certain attitude thing with defence, and that's how you win competitions.
Greg, what parts of the British game can you exploit, and where do you think you can make the biggest impact on the field?
Look, I'll just sit down and see what, you know, obviously Hilly's there, the captain, so I'll just see how he likes to run his team and the way he sees fit, and what Pricey as well. And then, you know, I know myself, it won't take me long to actually loosen my lips up and, you know, stop biting my tongue over a little bit of things. But, you know, I'll just have to get used to it. You know, it's a new club, it's a new environment for me, and I'll just sit back and enjoy my time.
With all your experience, it's likely that some of the younger Warrington players will be looking up to you. Do you see yourself as a mentor or a person that can inspire the younger players?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. You know, this year's taught me a lot. Well, at the start of the year, I've got to help out our under-16s, 18s, 20s. So, you know, I've got a lot of enjoyment out of that, given my, you know, passing on my knowledge and my experience. You know, I've got a lot out of that. So, you know, hopefully if anyone, you know, any of the players over there ask for help, like, yeah, I'll be more than willing to sit down and talk them through it.
And here they come again. They're coming in waves. They really are coming in waves. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And English will score. Great pass from Bryson Goodwin. The conversion is good. The scoreline is anything but from a Super League point of view. And South Sydney 18-0 up.
Greg, what parts of the British game can you exploit? And where do you think you can make the biggest impact on the field?
Yeah, look, I think it just comes down to, you know, Gareth has got a lot of experience too. He knows how to, you know, close out games, win games, and Blake Austin there, you know, he's, you know, he plays off the top of his head, which is really good. And, you know, from what I can see on, you know, reading for the team list, we have a great forward pack. So as long as our forwards go forward and we got our great halves and spine, which is a 9, 6, 7 and 1 that can control the game, well then it all comes back down to working together as a unit, and like I said, those key players know how to shut out the game.
Yeah. It's a bit early to know, perhaps, but are you a fan of the new six again rule?
It's a bit early to know, but end of the day, it's at the start, it was blowing scores out because teams couldn't really adjust, but now they're adjusting and the scoreboards are getting closer and closer. So, we did trial it in the, you know, in the trials start of the year, and I thought it was good, but you know, obviously coming back into it, it just brings back the smaller men into the back into the game, and just means the bigger boys have to get more aerobic fitness and a bit more lighter, and also teaches teams to be disciplined.
A few questions now from the younger listeners, Greg, if you don't mind. First one's coming from a young guy called Aaron Lindop. He's a belting player. He plays for Latchford. He's certainly one to look out for in the future. Aaron wants to know, when a game's not going your way, how's the best way to cope with that?
I think you just got to start focusing on the negative and put that aside, put that to bed. Enjoy training that week and you'll see the confidence grow in you, and just go next week and live week by week in that sense. You know, if this game's not getting your way, don't get frustrated with it. Mm. It's very challenging and it's very hard, but games like that do happen.
One in from a young lad, he's only 9. He struggles with nerves. He can't even tie his shoelaces prior to a game. He says, what is the best way to cope mentally and prepare for a match before a game?
What was his name, sorry?
Matthew Owen.
Mate, sometimes I'll get nervous before a game, so you're not the only one. I remember Matt King used to get nervous. He used to go in there 2 hours before any kickoff and get strapped up and still get nervous and almost spew up. So
yeah,
you're not the only one, buddy, that always gets nervous, and you know, it's just something that, you know, once you do your shoelaces up and you get to run out with the boys and run out with the team, and then you're right to go. It's just getting over that little bit of a hurdle at the start.
You hear that, Matthew? That comes from the greatest player in the world, mate. So you go out there and do it. The players that you've played against in England, which is the one that possibly hasn't come out to the NRL, Greg, that you'd have thought, gee, you'd have gone well in the comp over here?
Well, he just came over here. It was Hall. He just came over here with the Roosters, so he's the one that I've seen a few years ago that was, you know, that I thought that could really make it. And, you know, he's obviously come over here, played last week, I think, for the Roosters on the wing, and
played
really well. But
almost a shame he's at the Roosters, isn't it? If he was anywhere else at the moment, he'd get a run in the team every week. But the Roosters are just on a different level at times.
Well, yeah, it's just, I don't know how they do it, but they somehow, you know, do it. It's just like anyone can point out anywhere, but any other club and say, how can you do this? What's going on here? Canberra's just got that young Williams.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
Going well.
He went really well against Melbourne, went really well. I think I find, like, there's no disrespect. The thing is just the different level of intensity and competitiveness of, you know, the players here. And that's no disrespect to, you know, to Super League whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's probably why you see the forwards, because the forwards in the English Premier League can handle their own and be more brutal.
Yeah, yeah. Sean Long, who played for St. Helens, said that he didn't like playing at Old Trafford because they put the sprinklers on the pitch 10 minutes before kickoff. Do you think it is a different atmosphere in England? It's a slightly shorter bladed grass and it's a bit harder to turn off than it is over there in Australia?
Yeah. It's different turf. It's different environment. You know, you've got the moisturizer, you got the gel on the field, I remember playing for Australia, fullback against Fiji in St. Helens, and it was bucketing down. I think it was almost 0 degrees and sucks in the water. Our trainer bring out warm water to, you know, defrost my hand.
get used to it, Greg, mate.
I know. I've already asked for long skins thermos to play in, so
you'll be all right by the time it gets to March. March, you'll be fine. It's just some first 2 months will be bad.
And when are you heading over to Warrington, mate? When are you thinking of packing the bags and getting over here?
The club said aim for early December, so just get ready for early December and the season will restart.
Yeah, it's all a bit up in the air at the moment whether it will restart. But hopefully by the time you're over there, mate, the crowds are back at the Halliwell Jones and you score us that hat-trick against Wigan early on. Mate, the thing that really strikes me on this interview is, and the thing that's come across and just in your body language and everything else, is that you look ready to go, mate. I think the one worry that we all had was possibly that this was a case of the journey wasn't going to start. But the journey is by no means finished from what I can see, Greg. And this is going to be an absolute delight for the Warrington public when you get over there, mate.
Just decided to have a leap year off and then come back. So, but no, it's, look, it's something that I wasn't really thinking. I was more thinking about coming home, moving back home around my family and buying an acreage and land up here and just play for a local rugby league side. So,
yeah.
But then this opportunity came up and, had, like I said, had a good chat with the family, everyone, and, yeah, this was, they said, yeah, well, this opportunity won't come again, so why not?
And who's going to look after all those beautiful horses while you're away?
Well, we don't know yet. Might have to put them on adjustment farms and wait till we come back. So we'll wait and see. But the beauty of it, I've got a good friend down over there that's from Australia, moved over there, married an English lad that's just, you know, 20 minutes away from Manchester Airport itself. So they're into horses as well. So that's going to keep me busy when I have my down days. And
oh, mate, there's plenty of paddocks around Warrington, mate. I mean, a lot of people think that it's an industrial area, but it doesn't take long to be in beautiful countryside around Warrington. It's a lovely part of the world. You've got such a strong community there at Redfern. I mean, that is such a tight-knit community in Sydney, and sometimes that's hard to find. It's going to be the same at Warrington, mate. It's one big family. Rugby league's very different over there in terms of not just with Warrington, but the whole of the north of England will embrace you and you'll be part of a big family. Do you want to give something back to the community as well in Warrington in the north of England?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's one of my passions. It's one of my passions. It always has been. You know, I don't think I'm better than the next person sitting next to me. Now, everyone's got a story to tell and everyone's coming from a different walk of life. And somehow, if that person standing next to me and wants to have a chat, yeah, I'll take my time out. I'm happy to. There's things over here that in Australia that, you know, the Australian media don't know what I've done. And for personal reasons, because I don't want them to know, because that's what I do in my own time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much, you know, it's pretty much how I've been.
So is it almost an alter ego on the pitch? Are you kind of GI on the pitch and you're Greg Inglis away from the pitch? You say you're almost two different people when you're on that footy field in comparison to being around family?
Yeah. My family call me Greggy Paul, so I'm just, that's my middle name, so I'm just Greggy Paul to everyone, my friends and family. It's just Greggo or Greggy, Greggy Paul, and, you know, my family's just Greggy Paul and my friends just call me Greggo. So, you know, I'm nothing. You know, even though I've achieved so much in my life, I'll come home here and I'm just that kid that grew up alongside him through school.
Good on
you,
mate.
We've got a few names there to put on the back of his shirt then anyway. So that increased shirt belt. What sort of legacy would you like to leave from your UK experience then in the next couple of years, Greg? How would you like to be seen?
I don't know, just a guy that came over and did his best and had value to the team. Someone that didn't come over at the, you know, later into his career and just thought it was a holiday, because I said from the very start, I'm not there, you know, for holidays. I'm there to do a job.
I put you down for 30 tries in your first season, all right?
Don't tell the bookie that. You might get questioned about it.
And Greg, mate, is it only going to be a year? Because have you got a plan to escape and get back to the airport? Because if you go well, mate, which I have no doubt you will, I don't think they're going to let you go, buddy.
Oh, yeah, look, so far it's just going to keep the 1 year. You know, like I said, I've got a lot of different variations, variable things going on back home here. So, you know, I'll just, like I said, I want to come over there, do the best I can and play the best I can for that year and give everything I can for that year. Smith is looking around for Thurston. He finds him. Thurston chips.
Play by a leaping Australian flanker. It was Greg Inglis. He has flown outside the dead ball arena and raked it back into the waiting arms of another Australian.
Well, this is a reverse angle and the chasers, as you can see, they're behind the kicker. It looks as though that he's going to knock this straight over the dead ball line. Oh, that is freakish.
You know, it is World Cup season, end of 2021. So,
yeah.
Michael Ring, the big fella up now, see if I can get on the coaching staff and stay for an extra month or so.
I tell you what, mate, you only have to drink a pint of bitter in Warrington. You'll be playing for England next year, buddy. That's the way it works. We've had Blake Austin on the wing for us.
Well, I've been out for 2 years, so I'll probably put...
Yeah. Well, work on that, Dennis. Work on the passport now. We'll sort that one out.
What are you interested in, though, when you get to the UK? Is there anything that you want to experience over in the UK outside of rugby?
I am a Man U fan.
You know what you've just done there? Half the audience has just switched off there now, Greg.
I know, because I know some of
Liverpool.
The only reason I say Man U because I'm not big into soccer. I'm not big into the EPL or anything like that. I just, being over there and for the Australian side, we stayed in Manchester and that was, we trained at Manchester United, fields, well, not the Old Trafford, but the ones at the back of it. So I'm not really kind of big on it, but I know a lot of the boys are Liverpool fans as well. So I'll keep it open minded. I'll just wait and see when I get there.
Are you into coffee, Greg? Do you like coffee?
Oh, I love me coffee.
Well, mate, forget that. You need to go around to Gareth Widdop's house, mate, because he's having real issues over here, buddy, with it. So, Greg, many thanks for your time. At a time like this, it's imperative to reiterate what wonderful work you do in the Indigenous community. At a time like this, it's important to keep talking, getting in contact with family and friends. At a time like this, you're coming to Super League. It's a wonderful opportunity for people to say they once saw GI play. At a time like this, we welcome you to The Wire and we look forward to that winning try you'll be scoring in the grand final in the Primrose and Blue. Greg, from here at What Would Brian Bevan Say, we'd like to say your journey's far from over. It's been a pleasure. All the best.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
I'm a one-way motorway. I'm a road that drives away. Follows you back home.
As Lockyer puts a little kick over, and a mistake made by the Blues, and Inglis has scored again! Greg Inglis has scored his second Origin try! What a night!
It's times like these you learn to live again. It's times like these, you give and give again.
Played by him and now goes to the left for Thurston's. The kick is beautiful. No, it's a try for Inglis. Inglis has put it down. For a magnificent try on the left. A magnificent kick from Jonathan Thurston.
Well, the great players make it look easy. Greg Inglis made his debut game one last year, scored two tries in the opening 2.5 minutes in his second game. He's got another one.
The stars upon tonight. I'm a little divided. Do I stay or run away?
20-meter line and now Nate Miles. Now that's a good piece of work. Thurston got it away. Inglis is making a run down the left side. Maroon jumpers inside him. Oh! He's gone down the narrow side pass. Gidley has scored his second try. Kick from Barabas.
It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time again.
Gets the right bounce at the right time and puts the football down. Queensland open the scoring.
Sometimes you just can't account for chances.
To live again. It's times like these you give and give again. It's times like these you learn to love.
Result on the Gold Coast in about 5 years of age. Inglis is waiting. That prop goes across towards Greg. GI goes up, he'll score the lead. Does he get it down? I think he did. Try number 15. The most captain of all try scorers. It's a scorer.
It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time again.
But Alex Glenn just running off the... Here's a little chip from Benny Barber, tidied up beautifully by Inglis, and he gets around one, two, three, four, Greg Inglis, and he's still going. This mighty fullback for the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Will he go the distance? Greg Inglis at Suncorp Stadium. Yes, he will. What a try. Greg Inglis, you superstar.